Welcome to Small Bites with Glenn Gross and Derek Tim. We hope you're hungry.
Spaghetti you can eat with a spoon. Oh, SpaghettiOs.
Hit it.
Where's the beef?
Cookie.
He likes it.
Nothing for you.
Feed me more.
Long as I can have you here with me, I'd much rather be forever in blue jeans, babe.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, cats and dogs. This is Small Bites on Wildfire Radio. I'm Glenn Gross. I own Fat Jack's Barbecue in Philly and New York. And we're here in Wildfire's newest magnificent studios. And do you know why they're so magnificent? It's because Derek's not here.
I know, right? I was going to say, and I'm not Derek, Tim.
No, you're not. No. Well, neither one of you are really that good looking. So.
Yeah, I know, right?
But Derek's not here. I don't know where the hell he is. But I do have somebody.
His parole officer wouldn't let him come down this week.
Is that what it was? It was his parole officer or his wife, right?
Same thing. Same, you know.
Stay home. You're cooking tonight. So that illustrious, great-sounding, melodious voice is none other than...
John Effin Cole.
Better.
If you're listening to Wildfire Live, you're like, God, they put this guy on. He was just on like 10 minutes
ago. Yeah, we're changing it to Coalfire Radio. To start with, John, I'm not meaning to put you off, but I have another John on the line, and that would be John Howard Fusco.
Oh, the knowledgeable one. Let's get him in.
Yeah. Hey, John, listen, real quick, you got to fill in about 35, 40 minutes because it's only John and I.
We need the complete history of Cape May, right. Not just the culinary
the
history.
Verbal history.
So, all right, well, let's go see. Ahead. Back in the-
Talk slow.
Slowly.
All right. Go ahead.
All right, guys, let's look at the news from the past week. Now to the second Sarabul restaurant, the Korean restaurant, will be opening in Center City on October 25th.
Yeah, that's Chris.
This is according to Eater Philly. Mm-hmm. So look for the classic Korean fare and sushi be served, just like their regular location in North Philly. We have Ginza. This is a new Japanese eatery that opened on Front and Federal Streets, brought to you by the same folks who brought you Bubble Fish in Chinatown. This is according to Philly Mag. We have a new Greek spot in the Italian market. This is Kuguzeli. It's now opening, serving traditional and non-traditional Greek fare. On the Jersey side of things, a lot of talk this past week about Denim American Bistro, which had its grand opening this past Friday. It's taking over the Cherry Hill spot that was most recently occupied by the farmhouse. Definitely will hear more about Denim American Bistro. I attended a tasting on Thursday, and they just opened this weekend. Sola Cezanne. This is a new Dominican-style restaurant that opened on Route 130 in Willingboro. I got to meet the chef. He's from the Bronx. He's come over to South Jersey. He's a classically trained chef, so it's going to be Dominican, but with a little bit of flair to it, so that should be interesting. The food was very good, by the way, so looking forward to them. This is a cool story. Some breweries have gotten together, Cape May, Double Nickel, Tonewood, and Urban Village out of Philly. They're doing a beer collaboration. It's called Friendsgiving, and they're looking to raise about $30,000 for Cathedral Kitchen, Sacred Heart Church of Camden, and also for Phil Abundance. The beer will be available starting next month. You'll see it being poured in the breweries, and also you'll see it in cans as well. So look for those stories and more stories of interest in the past week from the Philly food scene. We posted later on my blog and shared on Twitter, at Eating in East Jersey, and hashtag is always Small Bites Radio.
Very cool, John. So, hey, when are you coming into the studio? I miss you.
I know, I got to see the new place, so I'm thinking maybe the next few weeks. I'm going to try to, you know, go there, maybe just camp out and just stay and do all the shows.
And swing by at the Red Store first.
What's that?
Swing by at the Red Store first and pick stuff up.
What the hell's the Red Store?
Oh, yeah, I know. I just had dinner there last night.
Yeah, dinner there last night, apparently.
Oh,
it was,
my God, yeah. Fabulous. Yeah.
Red Store?
The Red Store. It's in Cape May, right, John?
Cape May Point.
Cape May Point.
It's actually an old general store that they've... made part of into a restaurant, and it's fabulous.
So
I think one of the best places in South Jersey. Yeah,
I think you should invite us down there and buy dinner for us, don't you, John?
Absolutely, because one of us is an author that sold tens of books, so you've got to have money to pick up for
tens of books.
That's right, tens of books. Thank you.
Tell us about your book before you go, because we have to kill time.
Yeah, Coloring History of Cape May.
Yeah, just read the first three chapters. We'll be good.
There you go. All right.
It was best of time.
Available on Amazon.com and bookstores in the area.
Cool.
Buy John's book so he can buy us dinner. That's right. I like that.
That's right. Every 10 cents out of every dollar that you buy for John's book goes to our dinner.
God. Right? There you go.
I'm very happy with that.
Yeah, me too. So we'll have about 60 cents, right?
Exactly.
All right. I'll see you later.
Thanks, John.
All right, bye. Guys. Take care. Have a good evening.
Yeah. Well, he's always a wealth of knowledge, isn't he?
He really is. You know, we joke around a lot. Yeah, in the beginning, I kind of joked around about he was the less famous John in South Jersey. All jokes aside, I mean, the guy's written books. He's really knowledgeable. I would love to. We've talked about maybe having him in on Dining on a Dime.
Do it.
With Kevin Wilson. And
do
I
it.
Maybe just, you know, he always kind of calls in. I get it. John lives on the other side of the state. I know where John lives. We'll be giving out his address.
You're
a little bit
stalk
later.
Him?
No, I know the general area where John lives. Yeah. He lives like out in Ocean County.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's just say Wildfire Studio is not anywhere near Ocean County. So for him to come over, you know, I kind of like that idea, actually. Maybe we have him do a few shows on a Sunday.
Like you're getting ready to do today, right?
I got kicked out of my house and I have nowhere to go.
I can understand why.
My wife said, do all these shows and don't come back.
Yep. Until never.
Glenn will find a job for you doing dishes. Yeah, yeah, I know.
Well, I don't know about dishes. I have dumpster diving things to be done. But so what you guys on Dining on a Dime with Kevin, what were you talking about?
We talk a little bit on the show. That show generally, each of the shows I've been on sort of has a theme. Food Truck Authority with Gary Koppelman, we talk about food trucks.
Yeah, I don't care about that. What were we talking about before this show?
We talked about the Cheesesteak Festival, and we had Jim, cheesesteak expert, Facebook blogger. He's been to like 115 different places. Mm-hmm. It's called the Great Philly Cheesesteak Adventure. Mm-hmm. You can find him on Facebook. He lists all these places. He has a scoring system. Him and Kevin have known each other for a while. Kevin's written a book. I forget the name of it. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
Kevin's written a book, and they just got to know each
other. What's the name of it?
Table for One or Table for Two.
What, you don't know it?
I know, and it pays for the other show too.
But yeah, right. So there you go.
Every time he promotes that book, I have to take a shot. So it's really hurting my memory.
Yeah, well, I can understand why. just look at him.
I know, right? Yeah.
So you were talking about cheesesteak.
Well, we talked about the Cheesesteak Festival yesterday, and I know this came off as kind of harsh. If you guys are listening to these shows live or back to back, I kind of opened up a little bit on the organizers of that festival, mm-hmm. not to be overly harsh, but when you say Philly cheesesteak to people in this area, you might get 8, 10, 12 names. You'll get them in different orders, mm-hmm. but you're going to get the same names.
Sure.
None of those people were there yesterday.
Really?
And I mean none of them. No Pats, no Gino's, no Jim's.
Really?
No Tony Luke's.
I'll give you a little history of the Cheesesteak Festival when you're done.
No. I just, not only that, but We talked before the show, and you mentioned about how you do need a few off vendors. You know, somebody doing popcorn, somebody doing cookies,
you need
whatever.
A funnel cake, a cookie,
a funnel
an ice
cake.
Cream, right.
Unfortunately, there were as many people doing that as there were serving a legitimate cheesesteak. Mm-hmm. We had people doing chili. We had people doing these weird sort of European hot pocket pie things. Mm-hmm. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but
here's the problem.
You called it the Cheesesteak Festival.
Right.
In Philadelphia.
Here's the problem. Cheesesteak Festival, for example, people are coming out there to try cheesesteaks.
Exactly.
You know, now, I do a lot of street fairs and outside events and festivals. When you're coming out to a cheesesteak festival, you don't want a fish sandwich.
No.
You don't want, although I'm going to smack myself for this, you don't want a pulled pork sandwich. You want to try cheesesteaks. And the more cheesesteaks, the merrier. You know, and you always need, you always need the ancillary, that's a big word. Where'd I get that from?
That's in John Howard Fusco.
Yeah, I know.
He's a writer of sorts.
I know. You always need the ancillary, funnel cake, potato chips, french fries.
Well, people bring kids.
Right,
and,
you need chicken fingers.
Yeah.
Things like that. But, to have 12 vendors and four of them are cheesesteaks and the other one's a seafood, and it doesn't work. and that, you know, it's a model that, unfortunately, a lot, and I'm not picking on the cheesesteak guys, just promoters in general of festivals, they sell real estate. Mm-hmm. Okay, they sell real estate, and, you know, so if John Effin' Cole sells effin' burgers, and it's a seafood festival, they're still going to take you, okay?
Yeah.
You know, and if John Effin' Cole sells barbecue, and it's a cheesesteak festival, they're going to take you because it's money in their pockets. And that's the problem. You know, a lot of promoters just sell space.
They don't really,
and again, I've done street fairs and festivals.
Yeah, you've done more
for years.
I can't even count how many things you've done over the years.
I can't know. but my whole point is that, you know, I've done festivals where, you know, there's five barbecue guys and there's six funnel cake guys and there's 10 French fry guys. That's not the way to do it.
No.
Okay. In my opinion, that is quote unquote selling real estate.
We're starting to see that in the food truck industry now, too.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure.
There's one taco truck. There's two taco trucks. Maybe it's a little bit of a competition. Right. Last thing I go to in Central Jersey, there's 9 taco trucks. I'm like, is this a taco festival? No.
No.
It's just a food truck festival. And I'm like, why are there 9 guys here? Well, they all applied and they all paid the admission fee.
Right. Didn't you just answer my question?
And that's exactly what you just said. I'm selling a spot.
Right. And that's exactly what they do. You know, it's unfortunate that it has to happen that way, okay? But like you said, I'll give you another example. When it rains, okay, and attendance is bad for two reasons. Number one, it's raining, and number two, the threat of rain and so on and so forth keeps guests away.
Yeah.
So the vendors don't make any money. Who made the money? The promoters.
The promoters.
Don't look at me like that.
No, I just, you know, I try not to, like, really hammer someone hard, but it's 100% the truth. I mean, your viewpoint on this is, like, the clearest we're going to have on this. I'll mm-hmm. talk about this thing all week on different mm-hmm. shows, but right now, this is the clearest viewpoint we're going to get on this.
Well, I've done it for years, and I can't tell you how many times I've gone to a festival and I'm looking, there's 5 barbecue guys. You said it was only going to be 2. Well, you know, and I've pulled out of shows because of that. I've left. Okay. Well, you know, you said that there was going to be, you know, we're exclusive. Well, I've got another guy 2 blocks away and another guy 1 block away that's selling the same thing I am. Why would you do that when you told me that it wasn't going to happen? And it's unfortunate for the guys that are out there, you know, sweat. You know, everybody thinks outside events and concessions and cheesesteak festivals and so on and so forth. Oh my God! They come up to the event, the customers and the guests, and they see all these food vendors and these craft vendors and so on and so forth. Oh, they just appeared. Well, you know what? That's not what happens.
No.
Okay. You know, you leave your show Sunday night. Monday morning, you're unloading your trucks, you're cleaning, you're whatever. Tuesday, you're cooking, prepping, placing food orders, running around. Wednesday, you're reloading your trucks and so on and so forth. And Thursday, you're doing whatever miscellaneous BS has to go. And if you're on a weekend show and you're not close by, you're leaving Thursday night.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but for a while we've had a TV show in the works, and the working title is called Cash Chow, and there was a couple of networks that are interested in it. But the premise is the concession world, the viewing. Let everyday normal people see what goes on, not just at the festival, but what goes into the festival itself and how a vendor gets going. I mean, it's the Board of Health, it's licensing, it's fees.
Oh, it's endless insurance.
It's on big festivals, when I've had shows where we've done some serious money. On big shows, I take rain insurance out just in case, and it's expensive. But if there's, the last one I think we did was a couple of years ago, I think it's 1/10 of an inch of rain, we get paid. And it's just very expensive. But some, you know, there's shows out there and there's festivals out there that are $100 fee. Okay. There's more shows out there that are $3,000 fees.
Yeah.
Or 25% of your sales. And it's all inventory and they count everything and you've got to be spot on. But if you're putting up, if you're putting up a $3,000 fee, okay, then you have your labor, then you have your food, then you have transportation, then you have, if you're away, you have hotels. You know, there's the break evens could be $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 before you make a dime.
And that's a lot of anything. I don't care what you're selling. That's a lot of anything.
Oh, it is. It is. And it really is sad that has to happen that way sometimes, but it does. Cheesesteak Festival, and we can go back to that for a second. I was involved in the planning of the first Cheesesteak Festival in Philly, and it was at the Link. And to make a long story short, the promoters got bashed. There were 25,000 people there. People couldn't handle the vendors couldn't handle it. There were vendors that were selling sampling four different kinds of cheesesteaks. Do you want this, or this? You can't do that. It's here's your sample next. Like what we did. I sold 4,000 samples of the brisket cheesesteak that we sell at Fat Jack's at the first Cheesesteak Festival. And can I have one without onions? No, take them off. Next. Can I have one without a roll? No, throw your bread away. Next.
Yeah.
You know, and the problem is a lot of people that were doing these festivals and so on and so forth don't know how to do outside events and festivals. So it's not like a restaurant, okay? It's in, out, quick, easy, fast, and you have to get them in and out. You know, and like I said, you know, the promoters of the first one got bashed because it just, and I think they did a pretty good job, I'll be honest with you, for the most part.
Well, my personal experience of the first Cheesesteak Festival a couple of years ago was this. They asked people to pay different tiers of tickets, right? Mm-hmm. You get in for like $10, you get a halfway decent experience for like $25, and I think they had like a VIP ticket.
VIP was $75, I think.
A buddy of mine, just sprung for two tickets, decided we were going to go. Mm-hmm. Lived in Philly his whole life, lives in Maryland now, wanted to come up for this thing, big cheesesteak guy. He springs for this, we get up there. There's supposed to be a separate VIP entrance, according to the website.
There wasn't.
There's supposed to be, VIP was supposed to get in earlier, so you didn't have to wait on the massive lines. That didn't happen.
That may have happened. I'm not sure.
And there was supposed to be a VIP area where you could go and sit down. Tables, chairs, it was sort of fenced off.
Right.
And this is going to sound harsh, and I don't hate ladies, I don't hate babies or any of this other stuff, but I get my sample and I want to sit down and eat, right? There's a lady literally 10 feet away from me on the same folding table, and she's changing a kid's dirty diaper.
Well, that's very appetizing.
And I'm supposed to sit here and eat. And immediately, all of us, we get up, we grab our stuff, we leave. Mm-hmm. And one of the gentlemen ahead of me, trying to get out of this gated area, is like, why is she in here? She doesn't even have a VIP ticket. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I'm not going to say no to no lady with no baby. Now, this was a security guard ostensibly paid to be there.
Right.
So the guy's logical question is, what did I pay $75 for?
Yep.
The lines were super long. Mm-hmm. The cheesesteak sampling, like you pointed out, it's all over the place, right? It's taking you forever to get a sample.
Again, the reason the lines were long was because too many choices.
Yeah.
Okay? Too many choices. Or there was a couple of vendors that were making them to order. Well, you can't do that with 25,000 people. Part of the other part of the problem in the first year was that they I think there was probably 30 or 40 cheesesteak vendors, if I recall. Half of them ran out of product at 1 o'clock. And the show started at 11. The promoters told us, be prepared for 4,000 samples. Well, guess what? I went through every one of those 4,000 samples because I listened to what they had to say. Was I scared to do 4,000? Yeah, of course I was. But I didn't come back with any food. Okay, because everybody ran out at 1 o'clock. They came to Fat Jack's.
Yeah,
because we didn't run out. We ran out at 5 o'clock like we were supposed to. So
I remember talking to Jay. He owns Jay's Steaks. They used to be down in Pendle. I think they've moved since then.
They're right around there.
They're right around there. He was, you know, he was having a nice day. He was between a couple, we'll just say, not to be unkind, but by his own admission, more popular places.
Okay.
Right? And so he didn't get that heavy surge. Well, as soon as the more popular places ran out of stuff, the next thing you know, he's got 150 people in his
line. That's exactly right.
And it put so much pressure on the vendors who had prepared and were kind of, not to tell them how to do their business, but we're working the event right. Here, like you said, here's your sample, move along.
Right.
I don't want onions. Pick them off.
I'm telling you, that's exactly what we did. I had Kevin and a couple of my other guys working in the front and a couple of girls working in the front. No, take the onion. I can't sit there and make you one because we had two grills going at any one time.
Yeah.
And we seasoned the brisket because we already smoked. And we seasoned it and threw onions in it and we're just putting it together.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not making you one with no onions. I can't pick them out. I don't have time to pick them out. please feel free to take them out yourself.
Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. If you want a brisket cheesesteak from Fat Jack's, he's got locations. You can find him.
Right.
And I strongly advise you do that. I've talked about this on a bunch of shows. Your brisket cheesesteak is one of my all-time favorite non-traditional cheesesteaks, mm-hmm. by which I mean, Whiz, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's absolutely delicious.
Right.
And I see a lot of people, and I'm not like saying this in a negative way, I see a lot of people doing a brisket cheesesteak now. You're the first person I saw doing one in this area.
Yeah.
Now I see them, this restaurant has it, this high-level chef has it, and I'm like,
you know. It's funny. I don't remember how many years ago, 6, 7 years ago. I was supposed to be a judge with Macnell on his cheesesteak hunt
years ago.
And I, for whatever reason, I got there late and they had to put somebody else in. But I walked around, I tasted a bunch of things, and I saw a brisket cheesesteak. And I said, oh my God, how's this? It's not going to work. And I don't think it fit in with whatever the theme was. Again, just my opinion. However, I guess it did because I don't remember if he placed or not, but now all of a sudden the brisket cheesesteak is pretty popular.
Yeah, it's a good sandwich. Now, we had the great cheesesteak debate on the last show, mm-hmm. and we will have part two next week.
And where did Fat Jack's fall in on that? Oh,
we didn't get.
Oh my goodness, what?
We haven't gotten to part two yet.
Part two.
Part two next week will be traditional versus non-traditional, mm-hmm. and we'll each name our non-traditional picks. Mm-hmm. And Fat Jack's brisket cheesesteak will be my non-traditional pick.
I might have to bring some in now.
Yeah. I wouldn't hate that.
I didn't think so.
But I know people like, oh, you're just saying it because Glenn is sitting across the table. No, Glenn and unfortunately Kevin has had the misfortune of watching me eat, and he still has nightmares.
I can tell you right now that John is not saying that because I'm sitting across from him. He tells me that all the time.
It's the truth. It really is. I tell people, come on, this isn't that difficult. Find a Fat Jack's near you and go.
Yeah.
It's a really good sandwich. It's priced right. I'm starting to see some cheesesteak places now, and I'm not going to name names, but I'm seeing cheesesteak places at $19.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Unless this cheesesteak is 3 feet long.
Right.
We're still kind of talking about cheese, meat, bread, maybe a little, onions or something. Come on.
I'll tell you what, if you're in Jersey and you're around Blackwood, Clementon area, my former partner, Ed Willis, he owns Lumpy's Barbecue.
Okay.
And he does a cheesesteak. It's a pound of meat.
Wow. That's a lot.
I think it's a pound. It's either a pound or 3/4. I don't remember what he said offhand, but his cheesesteaks are really good. Okay. And it's a little off the beaten path from barbecue, but he does a good job with them. And I like them. So, if you're around there, go see him. He does a really good job with cheesesteaks. And he doesn't do a bad job with barbecue.
He's not you.
He's not, but I taught him everything. Almost everything he knows.
Where is he on the Glenn Gross scale of 1 to 10 of barbecue? I'm assuming I'm at like a 0.
Well, is there a negative number that we can use?
Fair enough.
No, Ed's probably up there 7-8.
Oh, see, okay. Very nice. Very nice.
I taught him everything he knows, almost. And he does a good job. So, if you're around there, he does it differently than I do. Okay, I'm a purist, and I slice and pull and what to order. He keeps his little thinned-out sauce and so on and so forth, and that's fine. It's just not what I want to do.
Yeah, I've had one or two people say to me at little get-togethers at my house, wow, your barbecue tastes just like Fat Jack's.
There's a reason for that.
The Fat Jack's packaging is in the garbage.
Yeah, there you go.
The truth is, and I've said this to people before, just because, I've worked at a diner, cater, cook, whatever. No, if I have family coming over, I will absolutely go out and get the best barbecue I can get my hands on. And for a long time, living in or around Philadelphia, it was easier to get it from you. Yeah, sure. There have been times where I've thrown meat on the grill, messed around with it. No one's paying for that. You know what I mean?
Right.
No one's waiting in line for that. I'm not, I don't pay bills with doing a steak on the barbecue or whatever. Go to people, and I certainly don't want to dampen anyone's enthusiasm, but coming from catering background, it's hard. Feeding people is hard. I see more and more people going out for Thanksgiving. And I'll tell you right now, it's a super fun Thanksgiving?
Mm.
Barbecue.
You know what? It's pretty funny. We do a Thanksgiving package, and it's a smoked turkey with everything,
like the stuff and
stuffing,
your cornbread
potatoes.
Is delicious. Everybody wants cornbread anyway.
And they do. And, I started doing fried turkeys for them, and it's amazing.
Oh, nice.
It's amazing how many people, because on the flyers that we sent out and on the website, why don't you try a pound of brisket or a pound of pork? I'm telling you what, I go through probably a case of brisket for Thanksgiving.
Wow.
And it's picked up the night before because we're closed on Thanksgiving. But I'll go through about a case of brisket for people who want a pound or two or three to take with their turkeys. And it's great. And it's amazing how many people have changed over the years their quote unquote Thanksgiving thinking.
Yeah.
You know, but
I've been married about 20 years.
Sorry to hear that.
I know. More sorry for my wife.
Let me apologize, Mrs. John F. and Cole.
I like to introduce her as the luckiest woman in the world. But
she married you.
She's the second luckiest woman. Everyone else ties for first.
Jeez.
But when we first got married, it was very much about having family over. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of cooks in our family, people who own restaurants, people who own coffee shops. Mm-hmm. So we would have almost like a little weird sort of like top chef in the house, you know, who made this, who made that. Then we started getting older. People started having kids. Mm-hmm. And now it's very much, you know, where can we find the biggest TV? Who lives closest to the best food? And, you know, I can just throw it in a heater and bring, yeah. You know.
What? Okay, I'm going to tell you mine, but yours first. What was your best Thanksgiving?
Cooking?
No, just cooking, whatever you did. You know, did you cook? Did somebody cook? Did you bring in McDonald's?
I guess we'll say, I've been accused of being a Norman Rockwellian Thanksgiving guy. Mm-hmm. I like the traditional stuff. Mm-hmm. I like the turkey to come out. I did a lot. This was a while back, kind of when YouTube was young.
You should have seen what he just did. He actually held a turkey pan in his hand.
I'm sorry, you guys can't do it. One of the very first YouTube videos I ever watched was instructions on how to do a Thanksgiving turkey, mm-hmm. the way they did it at the Waldorf Astoria, like in 1959 or something. Mayonnaise went on the outside of the turkey, and I know you guys are thinking, gross!
No, I don't think anything's wrong with that. It browns nicely.
It browned nicely, especially if you used some herbs. Mm-hmm. And back then, you know, I just used some dry herbs, a little hot sauce, a little lemon juice, mm-hmm. it went on there. And it was probably that one moment in my life where the turkey comes out, and it's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect color. I follow the instructions, and there's tons of oohs and ahs. And I would say this might be like 90 or 2018. I'm going to say maybe 99, 2000. Mm-hmm. It was very early on. I think my wife and I were either getting married that December or had gotten married in mm-hmm. December previously.
Were you living together in sin?
No, actually, there was no sinning. My wife had a real job, and you know,
and you didn't.
Well, I was a caterer. I worked as a short order cook. That's not really a career. My wife had a real job back then. But we sort of, it was, you know, we had a smaller group. We had the table, and it was very much the Norman Rockwell painting.
Do you still sit at the kids' table?
You know what? It's really funny. Last year was the first year I did not sit at the kids' table.
Really?
And we finally, we're having some of the older members of my wife's family. They're moving to Florida.
Right, so you're going to have a senior citizen table.
So I looked at my father-in-law, and I took my seat next to my father-in-law, my uncle-in-law, and I said, I've waited almost 20 years to get to sit at this table. I'm disappointed the food isn't better.
That's horrible. So I'll give you... Let me tell you about Fox first. I did a bunch of years ago, I did a segment for Good Day Philadelphia on 29 for Thanksgiving. And I did, you know, whatever I did. I did sides and the whole night. I did a turkey. And I smoked the turkey first. I had to because, it takes 6 hours to smoke a turkey into my smokers. So I brought it almost done, finished it off on the grill. And I had to feed everybody and the anchors and so on and so forth. And we were down in, I think we were down in Vineland, actually. And I'm cutting the turkey. And I said, look how moist and juicy this turkey is. It was dry as a bone. I got 6 phone calls after that turkey wasn't juicy at all. Oh, my God. What'd you do? Well, you know, I had to do what I had to do. I had to say what I had to say. I guess the two best Thanksgivings I had, I have a friend, his name's Sam Chan, and he owned a Korean restaurant. And that was probably 5 or 6 years ago. He invited us over to his restaurant. His family, our family, a bunch of friends, and we did turkey, but we did a Korean Thanksgiving as well. Oh my God, it was great. I don't remember what we had food wise, but all kinds of Korean appetizers and meats and dishes and oh my God, it was great. Just combined with the regular turkey and sides and the Korean Thanksgiving food and oh my God, it was awesome. And then probably 3 years ago, my controller Sherry invited her whole family over, and we had our family over and some friends, and we did it at Fat Jack's.
No.
And Fat Jack's was closed. So
imagine that you roll up and you went, oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm
just, well, it's funny. A couple of people did roll up. We invited them in.
Oh, see, yeah, that's very spirit of Thanksgiving.
And they're still regular customers to this day.
Wow.
It was really cool.
You know what? People remember stuff like that. They really do. You know what I mean? I was out on the road. Everybody has this story. There was a year where my wife and I can't remember exactly the year. I'm sure she'll do because it was my fault. We left later than we should.
Everything's your fault.
Absolutely. The weather was bad, and we just never made it to where we were supposed to go. It was supposed to be like a cousin's house, like down in Cape May County somewhere, and we just didn't make it. The weather was super bad. We turned around. It's probably like 6:30, 7 o'clock now. We maybe got 10 miles in like 2 hours, and we realized, yeah, we're just not going to make it. And we were looking for a place to eat, and we're stopping and stopping and stopping, and even Wawa is closed. We found in a strip mall, sadly, this place is no longer there. We found in a strip mall a little place called Sam's. It was just like a little Asian takeout place, and it was empty. And they were literally sitting there, no lie, watching on an old VCR. It's a Wonderful Life.
Really?
They were just sitting there in the, you know how like these takeout places have a few tables? They were all sitting there enjoying themselves. It looked like someone had opened up a bottle of wine. And my wife and I kind of peeked in and we were like, are you open? And they were like, yeah, open-ish.
Open-ish.
And we ordered, I said, at this point, we'll take whatever you have. Mm-hmm. You know, we want it. And we got it. And the snow was getting worse. It was really more like sleet, getting worse and worse and worse. We finally get to the house. We opened it up. Food is amazing. They gave us like three times more of the stuff that we asked for. We went, this was 8-9 miles from our house. We went there way out of our way. We probably passed a dozen Chinese takeout places. We went there until they closed because I was so appreciative of the fact that, yeah, I messed up. You know, we should have left earlier or we shouldn't have left or whatever. And the fact that they kind of went out of their way, they threw stuff in there we didn't even order.
Really?
Yeah, they threw stuff, like these little cakes. To this day, I don't know what they were. They were just like these
little... But you ate them.
I did. They were delicious. They were absolutely delicious. My wife and I, we'd gotten home and the power was out. It was Thanksgiving night. It's probably 9 o'clock now. The power was out for almost 2 hours. We're literally sitting at the table with a flashlight pointed at the ceiling and we're taking stuff out. And we're looking at it and half the stuff, I don't know what it is, but it smells delicious. I see noodles. I'm like, okay, I'm good.
I see
rice. And
yep.
We probably, no exaggeration, I bet we spent $2,000 in that place before they closed.
Really?
Over the years, just...
Isn't it amazing how you find a spot and you just continue to frequent it, patronize it, go there for, just like you said, the food was amazing and they did something that they went above and beyond.
Yeah, they really did. It was two brothers and their wives, and they just ran this place. And it was a small little takeout place. This is kind of before Yelp and everybody had to have so many stars and thumbs up or whatever. It was just a great little neighborhood place. And we'd asked around later, and the people in the neighborhood, there was a fairly large development, and they were like, oh, yeah, we go to this place all the time. It's super great. It was the first time I'd ever tried. Now everybody
what
has
city
them.
Was it in?
I think it was more. It was on 73, okay. So I'm not sure if that's Marlton or Mount Laurel.
It could be either.
It was in a strip mall way back when with, like, I don't know, there was like a place that sold boat engines or whatever. And now it's all sort of like there's a dentist office in there or whatever. But we get off the turnpike, we get on 73, the road is terrible, we stop here, we get our food. First time I'd ever tried what's called Korean-style fried chicken.
Oh.
And it was just...
I'll tell you a story about
it. It was food they made for themselves.
Right.
They were not selling them then. This is, like I said, this is 98, 99, you know, not...
You never even heard of Korean fried chicken.
No, I had no idea Koreans had any kind of fried chicken tradition.
That concept is huge right now. You know that, right?
Oh, yeah. I see it in the food truck world. I see it in the restaurant world. I see it on the street. People, you know, they'll set up...
Do you know what the secret is to Korean fried chicken? Because I do.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah.
I'm listening.
Well, I'll start with, again, I mentioned my friend Sam Chan. He wanted to do Korean fried chicken. And this was years ago, probably 5 years ago or so. And he wanted to do Korean fried chicken. And he says, come with me. I want you to go to, I want you to try someplace. And we went out to Cheltenham, Soho. I don't know if you've ever been there or not.
I've been to Cheltenham, yeah.
I know. I wasn't talking about Cheltenham, chucklehead. Soho. And we ordered we ordered 20 soy ginger wings and 20 hot wings. Took about 20 minutes to get the wings. And they came out, and they were very, very lightly glazed. So we're trying. Oh, my God. We went nuts. I mean, Sam's had them before. I hadn't. That was the first time I ever had them. So we ordered, like I said, we ordered the 20 wings, and I asked them for more sauce. They won't give you more sauce because they're afraid you're going to steal the recipe. No, it's true. That is absolutely true.
Later that night at their Fat Jack's Laboratories.
Yeah, that's, that's exactly what happened. So we ordered another 20 wings after that. We ate almost all of them. Oh, my God, it was great. Half an hour later, those wings are still sitting on the table. And when you eat them, it's half an hour later.
Wow.
So Sam said, can you recreate this? I said, yeah, I can. So the next day we went, and I went to his kitchen, and we started marinating wings and so on and so forth. The next thing I know, I recreated the wing. I made the sauces better than they were.
Ooh,
okay. And the secret to Korean fried chicken is it's a double frying process.
Okay.
Okay. So what you do is you take whatever number of wings and you put them in whatever seasoning they're using. It's a batter. And the secret to the crispness is to throw a little cornstarch in the batter. That's number one. But you throw them in for 7 or 8 minutes, and then you pull the basket out for 2 minutes and let them sit.
Okay. Okay.
Then you put them back in for about 3 or so minutes, maybe 4 minutes.
Also a bit like some places do with fries, right? They do like a double fry sort of?
Yeah, but that's because they have leftovers. That's why. But yeah, it's a double frying process. And what that does is that second, when you pull that out of the oil, the skin kind of, it doesn't dissipate, but it kind of adheres to the breading. It's almost like it's not even there. And then you finish frying it. Oh, I'm telling you, it's amazing. And then, you know, you brush the sauce on very, very lightly. And, oh, my God. I mean, Sam and I must have gone legitimately at his restaurant when we were experimenting, must have gone through, in 2 weeks, 500 wings.
Wow.
Oh, my God. We were so winged out, it was ridiculous. Okay.
And people listening to us, and you, if you haven't tried Korean fried chicken,
try it.
Please try it. And, you know, you'll have varying experiences, but if you haven't tried this stuff yet, no. When in the very beginning, I'm like, oh, it's like teriyaki sauce on a wing. I've had that before.
Absolutely
no,
not.
Nothing like that. It's a
absolutely
completely
not.
Different experience.
It is. And what Sam was going to do, based on the Korean fried chicken recipe, he was going to open up a chain of Korean fried chicken restaurants. That I put together for him. He got out of the restaurant business eventually, but you know, that was the plan. And all we were doing was fighting about percentages. So,
yeah, of course.
Well, I developed it, Sam. So come on, buddy.
But, my percentage is 98.
Here's pretty much.
Here's your 50 bucks, kid. Yeah,
Sam's. I'm putting up the money. I said, yeah, I understand that. However, I still didn't tell you what the recipe was yet. So, anyway, so that's my experience. But Korean fried chicken is amazing.
And I will warn some people, depending on where you get it, it can be spicy. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, ask your, you know, wherever you right. decide to get it. There's a place called Dulcet House in Cherry Hill.
Right.
And there are people, they have two kinds of Korean fried wings. The kinds, you
Is that
know.
The one in the Sawmill Village?
Yes.
That was Sam's place.
Oh, was it really?
I don't remember what it was called.
And they also do one that's spicy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're
careful.
Not a chili head, be careful.
Yeah.
I've had these spicy wings. Yeah. They're pretty strong. They're potent.
Yeah, well, they use, in this sauce that I used serrano peppers and Thai chili peppers.
Ooh, that's
killer. Dorothy, if you're listening, stay away from the spicy Korean fried chicken because I know that you don't like spicy. But anyway, you know, point being, there's so many ways to do these things. I mean, I actually played with wings, Korean fried chicken wings, but I was using my sauces. I did a Korean fried buffalo wing.
Oh.
I did a Korean fried honey barbecue wing. Same process, and I didn't dunk it and kill it in sauce. I actually just brushed the sauce on, so it was a very light coat. And what happens with that light coat of sauce, because there's the main ingredient, at least in the sauces we did, were Korean rice syrup. And and it's very thick. If you take a look at molasses and thicken it up 10 times, and that's what Korean rice syrup is. And it actually turned into almost a kind of a glazed candy kind of shell. Okay, and it was really, really good. And we just kept playing with it and playing with it. And I actually entered those in a wing competition one year. Didn't do too well, but.
Yeah, that would make me question the judges.
Yeah, well, you know, but, and it was funny. I just decided it was the New Jersey State Wing Championship, and we won that championship. Fat Jack's won it probably, I don't know, 4 out of 7 years. And I said, hey, you know what? Hey, let me try something different. Well, I was really stupid. But I did it anyway. I did it anyway.
You know, I've been a judge at Burger Brawl a couple of times. Mm-hmm. This year, I was the social media host for Rastelli's. And I see people. I'm going to try something new this year. Someone that's won something in the past. Mm-hmm. And it's right. I want to try something new. And when you say, for example, Lucky's Tavern, they were probably one of the first people in our area that were really, quote unquote, chefing up burgers.
Mm-hmm. Before, when I was in Burger Brawl, we won that year that I was in 2013. Lucky's did, I think they came in the People's Choice. They did a peanut butter and jelly burger. Oh my God. It was great.
It was great. Oh. There were people, Lucky's won, I think, People's Choice again this year with something different. Mm-hmm. But I remember everyone still talking about, it's funny that you brought that up, they're still talking about the peanut butter and jelly burger.
It was great. I gotta tell you, it really, really was.
I've talked about this before. 2016, I worked a little bit with Iron Hill and Maple Shade, mm-hmm. and we did a version of that burger at the bar, and the chef was understandably skeptical. I said, sure. Trust me, there's a precedent that this works. And the general manager knew me a little bit better and longer, and he said, we'll have another burger as a backup. We put this thing out on the bar, cut it up, let people try it. People were like, why didn't you keep this on the menu? Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, you know, it's not really something you'd sell every day.
Right.
But people loved it. And again, I know it sounds crazy. I know it sounds terrible. But it's not. It's delicious. If it's done right, peanut butter and jelly burger, especially if you add a little bit of, you know, like black pepper or something.
Yeah. You have to season the burgers. Regardless of whether it's peanut butter, jelly, sugar.
I don't get how people don't know that. Yeah, I want to taste the meat. Well, right. That's what the seasoning is for.
You need to pop. You have to make that meat pop a little bit. I do a lot of when I judged for Macnell on the WIP, his burger competition, it was amazing. I think there was 8 or 9 competitors that were finalists. And in fact, Tony Luke was a judge as well. And we generally had the same comments, Tony and I. Needed salt. You know, very bland. Good burger, but bland. Salt would have just made that burger pop. So, you know, I'm a big believer in you have to season the burgers.
Well, I'm watching shows that I've judged competitions. I'm watching shows where, speaking of seasoning, you know, depending on when you listen to this, I've let the most current episode of Hell's Kitchen. They sent someone home literally because she wouldn't season potatoes, and I'm like, how are you in a competition on Fox for a job that's valued at like $250,000 a year? And let's be honest, everybody knows by now. I don't care if you love or hate Gordon Ramsay, whatever circumstances are. If you've been in front of the television for 10 minutes, you know that there's the guy, you know, he wants things done his way.
Correct.
If they tell you to season a cert, well, I thought it was okay. He's just paying you to cook. He's not paying you to do it your way.
Right. Well, that's,
so they sent the person home.
And you're right. You know, it's funny because, I get people, and it's over the years. Well, you know, I thought it would taste better. I'm not paying you to think.
Exactly.
These are my recipes.
You're paying
me to
cook.
Don't you screw around with them.
Nope.
You're a cook. Very simple. Well, I added more chili seasoning because I'm not paying you to add more chili seasoning.
Now, I'll tell you what I would screw around with. If I had wings, I'd put your Georgia mustard sauce on them.
Would you?
I love that sauce. I know it's probably not your best-selling sauce.
No, we do okay with it.
Do you do? Because I tend to think of your sauce.
I mean, we use it for a specific sandwich. We use it for Tennessee Tornado, which is sausage, pulled pork, onions, and coleslaw, and then the mustard sauce. And I use it for...
is it on a triple play?
No, you can get it if you want. And I do. We do a. I forgot what it was called.
I think that mustard sauce, it is an acquired taste, though, because I brought home some of your barbecue one time. My wife tried it. That's literally the only thing I've ever brought home from your store that she's like, oh, I don't want that again. She likes your other sauce. I think mustard sauce.
I think it's kind of like scotch. You have to acquire a taste for it, I think, because It's a little mustardy, and you know what mustard tastes like. But there's also vinegar, molasses, brown sugar, and you have to. If you're not used to it, you may not like it at first.
Yes,
but you have to. You really do have to acquire a taste for it, I think.
Mike Strauss said that. He has like a little barbecue place in South Philly, mm-hmm. and he does a white sauce. Mm-hmm. He tries to do like the traditional barbecue sauces. And he said,
Alabama white sauce?
Yeah,
we do it too.
He said people will look and they'll be very he said he'll see the same thing. Someone will put it on a spoon and they think maybe it's mayonnaise. Mm-hmm. And he'll be like, no, that's a real. And
it is a mayonnaise-based sauce. Do you know that?
Oh, I didn't know it was mayonnaise. I thought it was like buttermilk.
Well, I don't know about his, but my Alabama White's a mayonnaise based. And if you go look through the recipes online, you'll see that probably 99% of them are mayonnaise based.
I have to admit, I guess when you say barbecue in someone's head, they're thinking of that deep, rich color. Absolutely. Somewhere between red and brown, right?
Absolutely.
And they're, and that comes with a certain flavor profile expectation.
Absolutely.
And the biggest comment I got about your mustard sauce was I wasn't expecting that. Not that they didn't like
it. Right.
But I tell them, I'm going to Fat Jack's Barbecue. You want, and they immediately, award winning, all this stuff. He's been doing it for years. So now they have an idea mm-hmm. in their head. And then I'm like, this is what I like. And people are like, oh, this is. One of my college roommates from years ago said, does he know you put that on your sandwich? I'm like, he sold it, so I'm pretty sure he's okay. It's on my sandwich.
I've done it on ribs. And and just my personal opinion, I don't know if the flavor profile of mustard barbecue sauce on the ribs is my cup of tea. It's good, but, I'll recommend it, but,
for me, it's more for chicken.
Yeah, well, it really goes good on the pulled pork. I don't like it on the brisket, although people order it with the brisket. The honey barbecue that we
all
do
I need
goes
for your
everything.
Brisket is a fork.
Yeah, well,
and a spot to eat and not be seen.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. Next time I smoke overnight, you come over and tend the smoker for 18 hours, and I'll give you a whole brisket.
Oh. So suddenly I'm wide awake.
Yeah.
This is my espresso machine to go. I've been fortunate enough to sit in with a few amateur barbecue teams or whatever. Mm-hmm. And anytime someone says, you can get barbecue anywhere. Well, yeah, I will say this. There's a lot of barbecue out there. There's not a lot of it done right. And the reason the price point is where it is, and, I've gotten this question a lot on other shows, too. The reason the price point is where it is you have no idea the amount of work it takes to go from when it arrives at Fat Jack's or mm-hmm. wherever, your local place, when it arrives and they're taking it out of the packaging to when it goes into the packaging, or I'll say on the brown paper.
I'll take you right through it. We get the brisket in. Okay, and years ago I used to use just first cut flat briskets, but the price, 4 years ago went up to about $6 or $7 a pound. So we changed over to big whole, 15, 16 pound briskets. And I happen, as much as I like the first cut briskets, I like the big ones better, although they're a lot fattier. But the reason that I like them is they are fattier, they stay juicier. You have the deckle meat and the nose meat that's that big bulge at the end of a big brisket. That's the, in my opinion, that's the best part of the brisket. Okay, because it's extra fatty, it's moist. Oh my God, it's great.
No, you hear that, people? You're getting like a little secret knowledge here today.
Well, wait a minute. I'll tell you the rest. So,
Derek, how come you never let Glenn talk more? Less from you, more barbecue knowledge. And I'm never on the show again.
Yeah, well.
So, see what you missed, Ron Sullivan? You were supposed to be in the studio.
Oh, yeah. Where is he? Remind me to tell you about brisket. Ron,
where is he? My guess is probably drunk at a bar somewhere.
That's what I was thinking.
And he's either cooking at a bar, drinking at a bar.
Or both. Maybe he's cooking and drinking.
I hope not.
Cooking, drinking, and chopping.
Ron, we miss you, bud. We'll have you hopefully come in some other time when your sponsor lets you drive again.
So, real quick, the procedure, and like you just said, when the brisket comes in, we actually open the cryovac up, we rinse it off, then I trim the fat, if there's excess fat. Then we season it and let it rest for maybe 2 or 3 hours. Then it goes into the smoker for anywhere from 13 to 15 hours, okay, over hickory wood. And then when it comes out, well, there's certain things we look for when it comes out, we let it rest for maybe an hour. Then we cut it into 6 or 7 or 8 pieces, and then we wrap it and cool it down. And that's the process. And then after that, it gets, we reheat it in the smoker and pop it into the warmer, and then we slice it to order. That's the whole kind of brisket trail, I would guess you would say.
And that, people, is why there's no dollar menu at a decent barbecue place.
You know, it's funny. I don't remember how many years ago it was. When all the prices of food wholesale went really sky high, we raised our prices a little bit. And that was the first time in 3 years that we raised our prices. We've been there 8 years. And it's the first time in 3 years that we ever raised our prices. Yeah, a quarter, 30 cents, 50 cents. No much more than that. I actually had a customer come in and looked at the menu. Oh, these aren't the same prices that were on my old menu. Right, we raised them. How dare you raise your prices?
How dare you?
No, that's exactly right. He said, how dare you raise your prices? I looked at him in is this a word, bafflement? Really? I, as much as I appreciate your opinion, get out of my restaurant.
Get out of the store.
You know, I'm here, I got to make a profit. And in order for me to make a profit, 25 cents doesn't cut it on a sandwich when the price of brisket doubled.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But I can't get $14 for a brisket sandwich. So I took a little bit of a hit, a lot of bit of a hit, and it did what I had to do. You know, we kept the price increases minimal.
Yeah, he could have kept the prices the same and given you a 4-inch sandwich if that was, he could have put it on one of those little Parker House rolls.
Yeah, I could have done a little slider roll, and it's still 10 bucks.
One of the things I try to do on any show I'm a part of, and I'm so glad, usually I know Small Bites is a lot busier. There's a ton of people calling in, famous people. I got this, I got that. I'm really glad
Thank you for calling me famous.
You are. I'm enjoying that. This is a little bit of a different Small Bites. I'm sure Derek will be suing me on Monday. But this
what do you
is
mean? He's already started.
I know, he right? He's in a lawyer's. Listen to him.
He just texted me.
I'm super glad for an opportunity to essentially just have like a conversation with someone at your level in the business. We joke around a lot, but it's the truth. People really, they know where to find the food. They even know how to find the food.
Right.
Grubhub or whoever brings it to them. Right. I don't care what you use. There's a million delivery stuff. But so few people understand how it gets from a farm or the water or wherever to your house. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things on Netflix, Hulu, are these sort of like biographies that teach you about food, teach you where your stuff comes from. And people don't realize the sheer effort it takes. So when you say, oh man, they raised their price of something 60 or 70 cents. You mentioned chicken wings a little while ago. Mm-hmm. Chicken wings used to be everywhere. And now the price is insane.
I just paid $2.19 a pound. 15 years ago, chicken wings were 10 and 20 cents a pound.
Yeah.
Why? Because they were a byproduct. And then all of a sudden, Anchor Bar in Buffalo came up and did
the
whole wing.
The
thing.
Buffalo wing.
Okay. And all of a sudden, it took off. So, and I'll give you an example. Like I said, just yesterday, I paid $2.19 a pound for wings. At Super Bowl, now, and over the summer, wings went down to about $1.60 a pound. Super Bowl, probably 3 weeks before Super Bowl, wings will go up over $3 a pound. Okay? So I buy my wings in another month or so, and I have Stanley Marvel, that's my supplier, I have Lee freeze them for me. And I'll buy 25, 30 cases of wings, Lee freeze them.
That's smart.
So I buy them at $1.80 a pound or $1.75, and everybody else is paying $2.60, $2.80, $2.90. Okay? And Super Bowl Sunday is a very big day for us.
Yeah, so,
a lot of people in the restaurant business don't plan, okay? And, like ribs. Traditionally, in the summertime, ribs go up.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Well, I mean, think about it. That's kind of when the average person, I'll say, not even a hardcore foodie, the average person, that's when they're buying them, whether it's from you, or they decide, oh, I'm going to take a stab at this myself, and you probably shouldn't, but people do anyway.
Well, and that's fine. Okay, but, the reason ribs go up is in the summertime, there's more demand. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And a lot of people don't know this, but around mid-December to mid-January, pork butts go up. And can you guess why? No, the bewildered look on your face.
No, I'm trying to think. I mean, that's kind of where pulled pork is coming from, right? So
the reason is, during that time, the islands... That's their traditional, one of their traditional holiday meats. So they import a lot over there and bring it over, and that's kind of why the pork butts and pork shoulders and so on and so forth go up considerably.
That's...
Yeah, I know you didn't know that.
No, I absolutely did not.
John, you're going to have to shut up for a minute. You know why?
You're going to say something?
No, I'm not going to say something, but I have somebody on the line that will. Barbie, hello.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
I'm just lovely. How about yourself? Are you?
I'm great.
Are you going to say hi to John?
Hi, Chef Barbie.
Hi, John.
How are you? I'm good. I'm here
doing
great. I'm here with Glenn, and he's educating me about the business.
Oh, I'm giving him the business.
Oh.
He's giving me the business, too.
Oh, my goodness.
He's believing everything I'm telling. No, anyway. So go ahead, Barbie. What's up, kiddo?
So this week I had actually a really fun week. I did the Taste of Ardmore, which really surprised me because it was at Ardmore Toyota in Ardmore.
Really?
And I got sent out and I was like, what is this going to be? And it was a collection of like so many businesses from Ardmore, not just Ardmore, but collectively from Ardmore. Lobby Restaurant, which just opened. Our friends at Iron Hill have a location out there that, they had a stand there. Bastido, like so many, 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 many food options that I took pictures of and posted and listed. And over on that side of the bridge, I got a chance to sit down and get a preview of the newly opened Denim American Grill.
I saw a picture of you.
But you really should go because they are open now. Chef David and his wife Stacy really did a good job of taking the old farmhouse, making it their own. Ironically, I happened to wear denim to denim. It wasn't.
I was not going to ask you that.
I just threw on my jean jacket because, as you can tell, the weather's changing. So I was cold, and just to support the weather changing, they had some really great items on the menu. Sage, Snoky, butternut squash Snoky with sage butter. Just some really, really, really well thought out dishes, really well thought out room. Lots of artwork in that room. Really, really cool. Really cool, cool space.
Yeah, it's really
that's
nice.
What
they
I've been up to this week. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because they had the restaurant in there previously, the farmhouse, and it was a great space. They just couldn't really seem to, I don't know, find their gear. I mean, you know the restaurant industry like a million times better than I do, but sometimes people just can't seem to...
My cat knows more about the restaurant business than you do.
Fair enough, that's true. But then again, the cat has your presence every day. I'm so super glad. I wasn't able to make it. I was invited, so I wanted to say thank you to Chef David. I'll try to get in there soon. There were some pictures of Barbie and Philly Grubb, Marilyn Johnson, and Amaris Pollock. All the ladies looking amazing. They were. It was the truth. David was like, oh, I didn't plan for this.
Right? It was great. It was really, 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 really great.
Cool.
So, I got a lot of things planned coming up this week. I'm going to actually, in about an hour or less, I'm going to be on We're Just Grubbing. So I'm actually headed into studio.
Oh, cool.
I was going to kind of crash you guys, but I just couldn't make it in time.
No, you could have crashed. It would have been fine.
And on Tuesday, I'm going to Yards Brewery, so I can tell you all about that.
Ooh.
Next week.
Wow. Well, ma'am, it's been a...
And...
Go ahead.
And I don't know if I told you guys this the last time I spoke to you. I'm going to Asia, Southeast Asia.
Oh, I think you said something like that.
Oh,
November 5th. So I'm going to be gone for a month.
A month?
But I think a month. I think that there's going to be one show for the year when I get back. Maybe.
Yeah, I'll double check. I think we have a few coming up, and that's it.
But I know that I don't have a lot of time. I took up a bunch of time, and you guys have to have that time for the Jackie Martin joke, right?
No, we have a Glenn Gross joke today. There's no Jackie.
I was Glenn Gross's joke today.
Yeah, we have a Glenn joke today.
Oh, so I can stay till the end?
Yeah, you want to stay?
Absolutely.
You want to stay? Okay, here... All right, so here's the joke. You ready? Guy walks into a doctor's office. Doesn't know what's wrong. Doctor says, "Here, lay on the table." So he examines him, tests his knees, his hips, whatever it is. Then he grabs a cat out of a cage that's in his office. T- takes the cat out, puts the cat on the guy's chest and stomach, and the cat runs up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. Okay, so 5 minutes later, the doctor hands him a bill. $700. Well, wait a minute. $700? All he did was examine me. Well, it was $200 for the exam and $500 for the CAT scan.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Anyway, Barbie, thanks. We'll talk to you later on.
All right.
See you later.
Talk to you guys next week.
Bye, Chef.
Bye. So, what do you think, Johnny Boy?
I think Jackie Martling is secure in his job.
I think so. I do, too. Yeah. So, quick. We got about a minute left. Talk to you. Talk to everybody about you, what you're doing.
Well, you know, you guys can always find me on Twitter, at @J_Cole, J. Cole, Facebook, and Instagram. I'm on Wildfire Radio a lot now. I'm kind of, you know, loitering here a little bit.
Yes, you are.
You can find me with Kevin Wilson on Dining on a Dime, Gary Koppelman with Food Truck Authority.
Get out of here. I'm Glenn Gross. I own Fat Jack's Barbecue. And we're out. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye.
Bye.